This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is Ed Whalen, who's president of the Ethics and Public Policy Center here in Washington. He also served as a law clerk for Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. Today we want to get his thoughts on the nomination by President Obama of Solicitor General Elena Kagan as the next nominee for the U.S. Supreme Court, replacing the retiring Justice John Paul Stevens. And Ed, it's great to have you with us again.
Thank you, Greg.
Well, there's a big debate right now in the first few hours after this nomination about whether it's a good thing or a bad thing that for the first time in quite a while, the nominee has no actual time or experience as a judge. Senator Leahy today, the chairman of the committee, said he's been pushing for this for a long time. Others say if you're going to be on the highest court in the land, it's good to have some judicial experience. What's your sense on the significance of that?
Well, I would think that if Senator Leahy needed a brain surgery, he would like a brain surgeon who had a lot of experience in brain surgery. And I think likewise, judicial experience is the best training ground for the Supreme Court. Now, that doesn't mean that a Supreme Court justice can't excel without that experience, but the challenge is to overcome that defect and not to pretend that that defect is some sort of virtue.
They, of course, on the left side of the aisle, point out to the fact that Sandra Day O'Connor, while she had some judicial experience, not at the federal level, and Chief Justice Rehnquist did not before joining the court. Did you get the sense that they had more of a learning curve than the others?
Well, that was well before my time, but clearly Chief Justice Rehnquist had a whole career in private practice. A career of real-world legal experience that dwarfs Elena Kagan's paltry experience. So, I think what's striking is that not only does she have no judicial experience, but she has, very little experience that's relevant to the job. Even in her career in academia, she has a scant record of legal scholarship. So, clearly, it's not her record that motivated the pick. President Obama knows her well. She's an Obama insider. She's been very effective at cultivating the powerful throughout her career. And President Obama evidently is confident that she will be where he wants her to be.
At this point, she's only tried, from what we've read, six cases as Solicitor General. The most famous, of course, is the Citizens United case about campaign fundraising, which she ultimately lost on a 5-4 decision. Another case that was recently in the headlines that she won on was the case of the Veterans Cross out in the Mojave Desert. Is there anything that you glean from her brief time as Solicitor General that will give you a clue as to what kind of justice she might be?
Well, what I would focus on are a couple more obscure cases. Recall that her obligation as Solicitor General is to offer, where possible, a vigorous defense of federal laws. And, in a case involving the Defense of Marriage Act, the Department of Justice submitted a brief that a prominent supporter of same-sex marriage called a gift to the same-sex marriage movement. The brief affirmatively abandoned a strong ground on which the Defense of Marriage Act could be based. Similarly, on Don't Ask, Don't Tell, she failed to seek Supreme Court review of a rogue Ninth Circuit opinion. So what you have here are a couple instances where she failed to carry out her duty as Solicitor General and seemingly let her strongly held views on the policy issues there affect her legal judgment. And that's a very troubling thing.
Oh, you mentioned Don't Ask, Don't Tell. That's an issue that she became embroiled in a controversy about when she was the dean up at the Harvard Law School, namely about military recruiting on campus. She basically wanted to kick out the recruiters as long as Don't Ask, Don't Tell was in place, and she was roundly defied in court on that. What does that tell you about her approach to the Constitution?
Well, that's another instance where it appears again that her strongly held policy views trumped her legal judgment. You had all eight justices that ruled in that case reject her position. She had, vehement rhetoric, really extremist rhetoric on Don't Ask, Don't Tell and the Solomon Amendment. And she seems to have indulged her policy views, rather than interpreting the law accurately. So it's striking because on a whole range of issues, she's has been very guarded on her views. So when we see one area where she hasn't been and her policy views have warped her legal views, it makes one worry that that may happen across the whole array of areas.
In relation to the last couple of questions, it was apparently well known a number of years ago. Now apparently it's not being confirmed that she is in fact a homosexual. Obviously that shouldn't disqualify her from being in office, but given what you said about her opinions on these various issues, do you think that she can be impartial if these issues come before the court?
Well, I want to emphasize that I don't believe those rumors. Folks I know who know her well tell me that those rumors aren't true, so I don't want to credit those at all. I accept the White House's account that those rumors are false.
One of the things that the left is looking at today in criticizing Solicitor General Kagan about, Ed, they say that she is not what they want to see at all when it comes to civil liberties issues, that she lines up pretty much with the Bush administration. Is there a record on that front that gives you pause or gives you comfort?
Well, she has had a more moderate record on national security issues. And, you know, I have some hopes that should be much better than Justice Stevens in that area. And, of course, my hopes are the left's worries, apparently. But I think that's an exception to a broader pattern that there's every reason to believe will be hard left.
What do you expect from the Senate? What do you hope from the Senate as this confirmation process gets underway?
Well, Elena Kagan herself, in a Law Review article some years ago, called for the Senate to engage in a meaningful exploration of a nominee's legal views, not just a statement of judicial philosophy generally, but an exploration of positions on hotly contested constitutional issues. I'm hoping that we'll have a real serious exploration of what the proper role of the Supreme Court is, on what Elena Kagan's views are on such issues as, you know, the role of foreign law in construing the Constitution, for example, a whole host of other things. And look, I don't expect, given the composition of the Senate, that this nomination is going to be defeated. But I do think it's an opportunity to expose what President Obama is trying to do.
Obviously, a lot of areas that concern you, Ed. There are some out there on the right saying that Obama could have done a whole lot worse. Do you agree with that or no? Given some of the other nominees that are out there, Diane Wood is one that they specifically mentioned.
Yeah, well, there certainly are nominees whose records were demonstrably worse than the largely cryptic record that Elena Kagan has. Now, it's a matter of guesswork whether over time Kagan's record on the court would prove to be any different from theirs. Again, I think there's some reason to think in the area of national security that the answer to that question is yes. I'm much more doubtful in other areas.
Well, we'll be watching the process closely, and we look forward to checking back in with you when the hearings begin. Ed, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Greg.
Ed Whalen is president of the Ethics and Public Policy Center here in Washington, former law clerk for Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.